As an operating partner of Launchpad, a BP-funded company that invests and helps scale early to growth stage clean tech companies, Siobhan Clark is helping BP reinvent its company and lead from the front on building a clean energy future. Siobhan brings a unique perspective to clean tech investing as she hails from the SaaS venture capital world. Siobhan was attracted to clean tech for both its economic opportunities as well as its mission-driven nature. And reflecting on her past life and her new one, Siobhan critiques what she feels is a broken model of VC investing in particular, and certainly in the past, clean tech investing specifically, and how the Launchpad investment thesis addresses those deficiencies, thereby unlocking the full potential of emerging technologies, as well as delivering handsome return to investors. Back with Siobhan in the time it took my beloved Tottenham Hotspurs to blow a recent match against Liverpool.
You're listening to Raising Your Antenna with host Keith Sackheim.
Siobhan, welcome to Raising Your Antenna.
Absolutely amazing to be here, Keith.
Thank you. And I know you're joining us from London. So 2:45, I'm going to guess it's getting dark already. Was it a sunny day or more of a typical dreary London damp day? Although I'm from London and I love it, so I didn't mean there's an insult, just more descriptive.
Yeah, I love London too. Greatest city in the world, although, yeah, you know, there might be some comparisons. Yeah, dreary day, a little bit of sunshine. I hear the snow heading this way into the UK. So fingers crossed we might get a little light frosting here.
Ah, okay.
You know, London, it just kind of sometimes misses out on that good stuff, but at least it's nice and sunny in the summer time.
So. And what is the current COVID situation? I know that I saw the British government is actually going to give approvals for the vaccines before the US. I think it's going to start any day, right? Is that what I read?
Yeah, fresh this morning on those approvals, which is quite exciting. And we've also kind of lifted ourselves out of a 4-week lockdown, although they've kind of opened up some of the tiers here, Keith. So I think it's going to be an interesting kind of couple of weeks. And it's more about the family coming together around Christmas. It's been a really crazy year for everybody.
Yep.
And we always kind of think within the UK, it's a time for people to come together at Christmas, to get a little bit of a break from everything that you might be doing, work or even personally, and just get a chance to reconnect. And I think that's going to be really important, much more so than previous years this year, but doing that in a way that's safe.
For sure. I think we just had a similar opportunity and challenge over Thanksgiving. You know, if I was in London during a 4-week lockdown, I would probably gain about 50 pounds between just pounding digestives and Cadbury chocolates. It would be ugly. So it's better that I'm here and I don't have those temptations.
There's no Reese's here either. That's a different one. I used to live in San Francisco, Keith. So I used to have my cravings for Cadbury's chocolate as well, like UK chocolates. It's different from US chocolates.
It is different. It is totally different. Okay, well, anyway, Siobhan, you've had a really fascinating career journey and path. Before we kind of dive into some of the issues I know we both want to address today, if you can share that journey, you know, with our listeners and kind of how you got to where you are at BP Launchpad.
Yeah, it's been a pretty interesting journey, Keith. It's involved like 6 different countries, everything from startups to consultancy to big tech with Cisco to actually ending up in investing. But the one commonality through all of that career has really been this focus on customer value exchange is what I call it. But it's always sort of been the business end of tech. So I did startups. I joined a small consultancy that was looking at how do you take small pieces of tech and turn that into multinationals of tomorrow? So policy making to government. I did an MBA, spent 6 months in Vancouver, having a great time learning about the BC lifestyle and the burgeoning startup community there. Joined Cisco in London, just at the time of the financial crisis. And with Cisco, had a really interesting journey from sales into sales operations, into strategy. So moved with them, spent 4 years in Singapore and a couple of years in San Francisco with Cisco as well. And then started to move my way into more deliberately the investing landscape. So I set up my own business, helping to work with seed-based software companies, getting to their first kind of commercial propositions, really understanding this value exchange with a customer. And that attracted the attention for some of the VCs. And I ended up moving back to London 3 years ago, joined a VC firm here, and we were investing in software at seed level within the UK. And BP Launchpad came knocking about a year ago and said, hey, we're doing this crazy thing over here. We're wanting to be able to achieve 5 years of growth in two. We want to scale energy businesses that meet a new energy challenge. And how do you feel about coming and helping us out?
And I guess the answer was in the affirmative. And that's how we are speaking today. So again, you have this rich experience and history in terms of investment on the general software side and now transitioning into energy. And mm-hmm. I've been in this game since 2005, the clean tech game. Yeah. And our purview as a marketing public relations agency is somewhat unique in that, we're obviously not involved in the investments. We're not involved in the finance side, but our success as an agency is very much tied to that side. So when the, when loads of investment are pouring into clean tech companies, typically those companies will hire us because they have money to go market. When they don't, they don't. So we've been around for a while, and I know that clean tech investment has soared by more than 3,750% since 2013, which is interesting because, the venture capital community, to say that they got slaughtered in their first round of investment in clean tech would be an understatement. So from what I've read, the investments in that first boom were about $25 billion, and the industry lost 50% of that money. 90% of funded companies during that time weren't able to return the capital invested. Mm-hmm. I mean, we both know of a lot of iconic venture capital names who got out ahead of this in terms of their public profile and then had to eat crow later. It was ugly. But much of the recent optimism we have now is driven a lot of it by political considerations. So governments at every level committing in some manner to fighting climate change, obviously cheaper renewables that really can compete on price with fossil fuels, technologies that are now proven, deployed and proven, and of course the ESG money that's on the sidelines. So, there is understandable reason for optimism. But again, somebody like yourself who has been in historically be considered the most successful venture capital industries to now enter clean energy where the success has been late at best. So what's your take on today's gold rush? And specifically, did the VC community learn its lesson from its losses and wounds of, say prior 2010 or 2015? And can it invest in a manner now that spurs innovation, but also returns money to its investors?
Yeah. I mean, when you quote some of those figures, Keith, it has been a crazy journey when you look at the evolution of energy and energy investing. And I think even like Alice Ross, right, she's just kind of written a book around investing to save the planet that kind of sets out some of that history and where we're kind of going from. And it's really interesting that you use this word about today's gold rush. And to me, I think this is kind of like in parallel to the gold rush that maybe we've seen at the end of the 90s and the early 2000s in terms of the first kind of tech boom or the first internet boom. And therefore, the result of what you saw maybe 2014 kind of onwards from a software standpoint, there was a dip. And there'd been a dip in kind of the energy investing kind of landscape as well. And a realization that if we're going to come back and do this, what do we need to do differently? What does the world look like for going forward? And I think to me, we haven't even reached the gold rush yet, Keith. I think there's a lot of hype kind of rolling around associated with some very asset heavy businesses. I believe there's a gap in software, in digital platforms, in looking at this combination between energy and software, because the whole world's kind of moving to a decentralized, decarbonized kind of electricity. It's moving towards an electron value chain. And when you think about that, that certainly opens up more opportunities to bring in digital, to bring in software into this. Whereas maybe some of the previous ones before were really about, let's build out and let's scale something that is maybe a bit more of an asset heavy business.
That makes a lot of sense and interesting. If this is not the gold rush, can't wait to see what it is. I think that, you know, your response segues nicely into the next question I had, which is, you know, in our conversation that we had last week or 2 weeks to prepare for this podcast, you made a really compelling case for the Launchpad investment thesis. And so if you could unpack that investment thesis for our listeners, you know, what drew you to it? Because again, you have this successful career in a different industry. So you choosing to opt into energy is an interesting one. Why do you think this model or this investment thesis really does meet the needs of the energy industry? Because as I've learned over the last 15 years, and you know as well, I mean, the industry has, like every other industry, has its own quirks, eccentricities, and nuances, which is probably why the first wave of investing fell flat in its face. So anyway, can you kind of, again, reflect on the investment thesis and what drew you to it and you know, why this is going to work in energy?
Yeah, and we've also had our own journey around this, Keith, over the last year. So, you know, as a Launchpad, we were created in order to be able to, well, let's create scale ups. And we're deliberately using this word scale up. Let's kind of invest in and help to scale companies that are progressing.
I love that term. We may steal it for other clients, just letting you know.
Totally fine. Totally,
but I will give Siobhan credit somewhere.
And I'm sure it's not even my name, but it's to me, this word scale up really makes the difference, because there's an ambition that sits with Launchpad as the investor. And this is the thing that really attracted to me, is about scaling a business really quickly that helps to address this net zero. So we've kind of evolved to, as Launchpad, I think our original investment thesis had like something like 7 broad topic areas, including like circular economy. It had like mobility. And those, in some ways, Keith, are very generic terms. They don't really tell you anything about what is the belief structure for the investor about where they want to go. And as we started kind of working with a number of different companies, I mean, we're at 4 portfolio companies now. We've just kind of closed with our 5th one. So I'll be very excited. That should be announced within the next 2 weeks. And as we've gone out to talk to a number of companies that are at the seed, Series A level, about where they're at on their scaling journey and where can Launchpad kind of support that, we've actually dug deeper into that investment thesis. And there are 2 key themes, Keith, that we're working with now. So if we take a step back and we say, as Launchpad, we're building a progressive portfolio of digital companies that are addressing the net zero challenge, what does that mean that we're investing in? So the first-hand investment is really around industrial analytics for energy system optimization. So what is the use of sensors, of data, of analytics in order to be able to optimize energy systems? So the example being one of our companies within Onyx that is pulling data from the drivetrain that helps operators or wind operators to be more efficient in the way that they are running their assets. The second investment thesis that we are really excited about kind of scale ups, maybe coming or those companies that are interested in scaling up coming and talking to us about, is intelligent commodities. So and this is tied to this idea of a provenance of data. So there's a very digital theme here. So a commodity, Keith, could be carbon, that could be waste, that could be heat. It could be kind of metals. And can you use technology in order to be able to determine what that commodity is? Can you validate that? And if you can validate that, can you track its usage? Can you have an exchange of value that is associated with it? So those are kind of our 2 key investment theses for going forward. We are, of course, interested in mobility, but I think we're evolving our thinking around what does mobility mean as an investment thesis under this arm of climate tech. We're also exploring the human-machine interface. And of course, this idea that we talked about earlier in terms of the electron economy, in terms of, well, energy as a service or the electron as a persuasive item that exists, what does that mean for a whole set of new companies that are scaling to meet future energy demands?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess, you know, we do a lot of work in the mobility sector and agreed that one could slice that up and define it into different segments. You know, what we found initially, and really our mobility practice was a spinoff of our, you know, clean energy practice. And the common denominator for us and the expertise that we had kind of developed in clean energy that really translated well into the mobility side, of course, is energy storage and batteries. You know, there's probably been more innovation in that in terms of chemistry, manufacturing, and price over the past 5 years than any other segment of the industry. Obviously, it's still got a ways to go to make all this affordable, but it's pretty remarkable what's happened in the last 5 to 10 years. You know, I remember one of our earliest clients that was on the kind of utility scale side of batteries. I mean, they had 5 massive fires in Hawaii before they finally shut the company down. I mean, there's, you know, it's been an incredible journey. And, you know, so to me, like, you know, when I look at the EV industry or mobility in general, I see a lot of that. And, you know, even when you look at Tesla, for example, say, you know, Tesla, it's the cars that get all the hype. But the reality is it's an energy company at this point, you know, between the SolarCity integration, you know, the Powerwall. I mean, ultimately, I know their vision is that all of our homes with a Tesla car will be its own grid, serviced by and powered by Tesla. So there really is, I think it is, you know, kind of the clean energy component or the energy future component of the EV industry, certainly, and a lot of the leading companies is inextricably bound to clean energy. But anyway, that is a good way for me to get at my next question, which is in general about a bubble that is, I think it's forming right now in the electric vehicle industry. And, you know, Tesla's the most successful stock of the past 5 years. Nikola went public with a massive and some would say unwarranted valuation. And there are dozens of other companies, many of them are clients. So, you know, we're not against this and we're cheerleaders for it. But the reality is they're raising money at billion-dollar valuations in the private markets or in the public markets through SPACs or traditional IPOs. I think the improving price and performance of lithium-ion batteries are driving much of the economics of the industry, but there does seem to be an investment bubble forming. So I know right now for BP Launchpad, the mobility ecosystem as broadly defined is not, you know, where you are right now. But if you can look down the road, which part of that ecosystem do you find interesting? And, you know, when you look at specific companies, what would you see as the biggest challenges and opportunities?
And there is, it's almost like part to your back to the comment we were making earlier, Keith, about the gold rush.
Yeah.
But I think there is there's a lot of momentum right now in terms of and this will connect into this mobility question you just asked, right, about what we're excited about. There is an incredible amount of momentum now in governments and their ambition to kind of move towards a commitment to net zero, in corporations kind of moving into that direction. And the emerging, maybe emerging is the wrong word, but the realization that climate really is at the front. It's the front face for all of us, right? Sit in London and the changes in weather, et cetera. But yeah, I'll maybe the realization, well, it's the redo, the realization that climate is a problem that is for now to solve. And I think that consumer knowledge means that when we start to look at mobility, there's two elements that we can kind of look at this from. One is around as a consumer of electric vehicles, you know, how am I going to fill up and how am I going to manage? How do I know where all the charging stations are? How do I know that this isn't going to cost me more? And we talk about this idea of Tesla wanting to be able to own that entire view with the home. That's a really interesting point of view because that sits to this aspect of the car or this fleet that's moving around that becomes a moving battery, right? It's a storage unit. It kind of puts us back and forth on these demands on the grid. And so for us, I mean, you hear me rolling through a number of thoughts, Keith, because there are kind of two components. One, we're looking at it. Is there something on the consumer side that we need to be helping the consumer to understand where those electrons are moving, how much that costs and what impact that is having for them? And then the second thing is, well, if you start to look at it from a fleet standpoint and managing multiple fleets, how do you know a vehicle is in the right place at the right time? And then starts to get into this V2G kind of aspect and demands on the grid and kind of storage units there. as Launchpad, I think the consumerization view is something that we really want to explore. Is there something that we should be doing to help the consumer to understand what is happening, to make the right choices as this just becomes more and more part of the foreground for them?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess that really works into, you know, I guess the BP Launchpad brand promise, which is turning scale-up companies, and now I'm using the term, turning scale-up companies from $10 to $20 million in revenue, and then within 3 to 5 years, hopefully scaling them to $200 to $300 million. So can you kind of reflect on that blueprint when you speak to entrepreneurs? I mean, that is the biggest pain point is, all right, you know, have a great idea, have a great product. How the heck do we get it to market and scale? That's a pretty complicated and vexing challenge. And then the other thing I'm really interested in is what Launchpad does is it attaches it to the hip of dynamic, kind of move fast, break things type of startup culture. What does that look like? And how have you kind of been able to make this kind of a calculus of BP plus startups, not one of conflict, but really of 1 + 1 = 3?
Yeah, and you really hit the head on why I partially joined Launchpad or BP Launchpad, and why this having BP sit here is a really interesting combination. It is something different in terms of model of investing that is out there. So there are three things that I see that are different about this scaling. And then I'll come back to the question of how does that support into the scaling journey for any company. So there are three really interesting things that I see for a Launchpad that we've got. The first one is platform. And we call this the platform model in VC, which is really, you know, do you have people that have scaled this before? Do you have some of that operational expertise of scaling that you can lend that experience to someone else? So it's effectively a bit like, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants because you're not trying to learn those lessons first. So from a platform standpoint, Launchpad has, we set up a number of teams, a number of practice areas in talent, in growth, in technology, in operations. And that is filled with this incredible talent that have all gone through this seed or series A to series C, series D scaling mechanism. And they know what that craziness of that journey and the speed of that journey can feel like. But they also know, as if you go through that for any of the entrepreneurs who are in the midst of going through that journey, it's crazy complex. It feels like chaos. And so processes are constantly breaking down as you move from 100 customers to 1,000 within a 12-month timeframe. So we have a platform model of people that know what it's like to be part of that journey. So there's an empathy and an intimate understanding. And then the second thing is they've got ways of being able to deal with that. Here's your technique. Here's how you do this. And that adds momentum to a scale up, that platform component. There's a second component, which is around performance on a performance edge. And as a scale up, you have a couple of things that you really should have in place. If you've got the right plan, so the product, the scaling, the customers, you know what that looks like. So you have the right plan. You have the right leadership team and the right leadership drive. And then your third component is performance. The other word to call a performance could be discipline. It could be absolute laser focus. It is choosing the direction and it is focused execution against that direction. So as Launchpad, we set ourselves up so that you have the company, you have the board, you have Launchpad, and everybody is heading towards the same growth plan. So we hold ourselves accountable to, and we're very proud about talking about high performance environments and sustained high performance environments, which is partly cultural and partly kind of technical tools and partly focus on the things that we want to be able to do. And then this third one to Keith, this what you talked about, this BP is this large corporate with, you know, sometimes called as well the rebels within the machine. Actually, I think there's a power of both there. There's okay. A power of pace and execution that is matched and fundamentally matched with a power of scale that BP has. And what we look to be able to say, you know, back to our idea of the investment thesis, is where is there a scale up that can benefit from that relationship with BP? So is BP a customer? Is there something about the partnership? Is there something about the sensors and data that could be utilized on some of the BP assets? So there's an intimate relationship to that power of both, but a certain level of separation around kind of we're driving towards performance, but you've got people with that experience that are helping to support the company on its growth journey.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. That's that makes a lot of sense. And I think the advice for entrepreneurs, I think there's a lot that they can extract from that and apply to their own situations. And yeah, I mean, I find a similar dynamic between, you know, to BP Launchpad with startups that you found, you know, funded the mobility sector where you have Detroit and Silicon Valley. Combining efforts and you know, I'm a big believer in that kind of a Hegelian perspective on things. Friction actually is the only way to yield you know, innovation and progress. That dynamic can be painful at times. I'm glad to hear that, you know, someone like yourself is able to facilitate a lot of that. And I'm sure, well, I know, since I guess in full disclosure, we do work, Antenna does work with BP Launchpad, so I do know great things are happening there. Last kind of thing we can discuss is really an open floor for you. And I know you already made one book recommendation, so you preempted that. But if you want to reiterate that book recommendation or anything else.
Yeah, I'm maybe take it back to Keith, one of the questions you were talking about in terms of how does an entrepreneur kind of actually, I've got an idea, how do I kind of make that journey between this idea and scale? And this is also connected in some ways to what I call a bit of an obsession that I've got about customers or finding value exchange. So, you know, I'm putting a book recommendation for a book that's not out there yet. So myself and a founder friend have written something called The Founder's Handbook, How to Get to Your First 10 Enterprise Customers. So our experiences of scaling companies, we have set out this idea of this journey from how do you get from the idea to product market fit to your first 10 enterprise customers. And when you've got to your first 10, then you can actually kind of go on a scaling journey. But until you know, back to that point around laser focus, until you know what you're actually trying to focus on, there's a little bit of a loop that goes back and forth, and that can be frustrating, but there is a framework to be able to get through that. So it's a shameless plug, Keith, for a book that will come out eventually next year on the Founder's Handbook for how to get to your 10 enterprise customers.
The good news is when you're speaking with somebody who is in public relations and marketing, there is no such thing as a shameless plug. It's either an effective one or non-effective one, and that was pretty effective. So well done. So Siobhan, thank you so much for joining us on Raising Your Antenna, and look forward to when all of this pandemic craziness is over, either, you know, meeting in person in London or San Francisco or somewhere else. And really appreciate it. I know our listeners are going to find this podcast both really interesting and useful.
For sure, Keith. Been a pleasure.
And another episode of Raising Your Antenna is in the books. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and look forward to connecting again next week. Raising Your Antenna is a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, Keith Zackheim, that features the movers and shakers and key influencers of the B2B technology industry. Our guests are leading revolutions and disruptions in the mobility, clean energy, healthcare, and real estate technology industries. Raising Your Antenna is brought to you by Antenna Group, a full-service digital marketing and public relations agency that focuses on the B2B technology industry. Please be in touch with me on Twitter at @CZackheim with any feedback about this podcast. And check out Antenna Group at www.antennagroup.com if your organization is looking for a really smart and good-looking marketing and public relations partner.